debaixo do meu chapéu não vai mais sair. Eu sou o combo perfeito pra iludir. Meu beijo vai te viciar, minha pegada vai fazer você gamar. Debaixo do meu chapéu não vai mais sair. Eu sou o combo perfeito pra iludir. Se prepara. As verdadeiras.
This is Peter Laws in Norman, Oklahoma. AM, FM, shortwave, amateur radio, and more. You'll hear all the latest news from the world of radio each week with Sheldon and Jill on the International Radio Report on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
Welcome, everybody, to the International Radio Report on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. My name's Sheldon. I am here with Jill. It is Sunday, November the 19th, 2023. We thank you for tuning into our show. We are here every week with 30 minutes of news and information from the world of radio. If you'd like to reach us, our email address is radioreport@yahoo.com. We are live streaming and archived at ckut.ca. Our Facebook group, which you're invited to join, International Radio Report, we have 950 members. Our YouTube channel, you'll find us on YouTube at IRR is the group, the channel for the shows that you can listen to at your leisure. The new shows are up usually within an hour or so after the live broadcast airs. And you can go back and listen to previous shows as well. We have an X account at IRRCKUT. Picked up another member, another follower this week. So we're at 37 on the X program. If you want to go and log in there and follow us, you're more than welcome to do that. Well, today is a very special day for us here on the International Radio Report. It is our birthday, or our anniversary, also the anniversary of CKUT Radio. It was 36 years ago today. I get chills saying that number, but 36 years ago today that this radio show, the International Radio Report, went on the air. Also this week, CKUT activated its full-time license, became a regular FM radio station on 90.3, campus community station. And we are really pleased to have with us today Sue Elrington, who was the station manager at CKUT 36 years ago today, who graciously allowed us to put this radio show on the air. And we're still here. Susan is with us here today. Near Victoria on Vancouver Island. Thanks for being with us, Sue.
Oh, thanks for having me, Sheldon. It's like old times.
It is. It's great memories. I'm so glad you were able to be with us here today. So we want to turn back the clock a little bit, go all the way back to where it all started. Maybe you can tell our listeners a little bit about what the job at hand was for you at that time as the date was approaching and you were ready to roll.
Oh, wow. It was chaotic, let's put it that way. I became station manager, and we already had the license at that point. But getting the license is very early on in the process. Then you have to technically get your setup. We had to figure out what programming we were going to do and then get people to do it. And there was a lot to do. Technically, it was funny because you have to test your signal over a period of time, and they would fly planes around. It was very complicated to make sure your signal was not interfering with things it shouldn't interfere with. And the transmitters were all up on Mount Royal, and there were four stations, the other three being commercial stations, and they had the money to have engineers up there. We didn't. We were very poor. And so our station volunteers would go up and knock on the door and sit by the transmitter and wait for the plane to say, turn it on, turn it off, turn it on, turn it off, and then trudge on back down the hill. And the security guards were very suspicious about this at first, but they got used to us heading up there, up the hill, and doing your shift to turn it on, turn it off, turn it on, turn it off. And the first round that we had, they came back and they said there was something called spurious radiation. And that became so big for us, we actually named our internal newsletter Spurious Radiation at one point. Because
nice.
it was, which I gather was simply that we were interfering with something and they didn't know why or how. They said, that's it, it's over, you can't go on air, done. Luckily, because there were four stations and the other commercial guys were like, no, we've got to go. They managed to get them to run a second round of tests with the plane. And so we trudged up the hill again, turn off, turn on, turn off, turn on. The spurious radiation was spurious, and so it disappeared. It didn't
right.
come back, and we were able to go on.
That's not uncommon. You know, any station does have to go through that period at the beginning.
So much riding on it. It was very, very nerve-wracking. And the other part of what we had to do, Sheldon, was literally figure out how we were going to govern ourselves on air, I guess. This was a controversial station for the English University to get the first community license in Montreal, and we knew there was a lot of scrutiny, a lot of eyes were on us. And at the same time, we had so many people walking through the door, yourself being one of them, saying, hey, I've got an idea for a show. And some of them were pretty what would be considered radical for the times, right? But some of those shows we had on in the early days were called Dykes on Mics, The Homo Show, The Prisoner's Rights Show, a show about El Salvador, and so on. These were topics that weren't being represented in mainstream media at all. And so by that nature, they were considered quite radical. So we did a lot of thinking about that and actually sat down and came up with a statement of principles that would guide us in decision-making about this kind of stuff, and that it would be reviewed every year. And I'm very proud of that. I think it was a really good thing. We actually presented it to the CRTC at one point, and they said there they wish that every station put as much.
You got back to me, and we had a meeting, and I'll paraphrase it, but it was basically, I'm not really sure what you guys want to do, but yeah, it's okay. Go ahead. You know, you got it. So go with it and run with it. Well, 36 years later, here we are.
There you are.
Still running.
Well, it says something for you. You were that kind of person at the time that I felt like, yeah, this is a pretty trustworthy kind of person. But it was also, I didn't get technically what you were talking about necessarily all the time.
Right.
But I understood that you were talking about managing more and more ways to have us communicate and talk with each other and understand each other. And that, to me, was the underpinning of everything we were trying to do, is to open up doors that hadn't been open or that people might not otherwise have even known existed, and allow them to see what was out there. We never tried to push to say you have to think one way or another, but you don't even know what you want to think until you see something. And so that's the essence of your show. I understood that right away, and that was important.
We knew as shortwave listeners that and consumers of international broadcasting that we were hearing alternative programming to what mainstream media was covering on the radio. So we wanted to bring those stories and bring that knowledge to people that, hey, you know, you don't have to sit on this radio station all day long or whatever station you listen to, but there are all these other interesting things to go out and listen to.
Yeah, and it's probably really hard for people to imagine now, when you literally can hold the world in your hand in your phone, to understand that at that time, that didn't exist for most people. If people didn't practice shortwave themselves, there wasn't really a place that they got those kinds of stories or they heard those kinds of things. So it was a really valuable service. It was an important service that you were providing in the show that you were doing.
There's a very small percentage of people in North America, even at that time when there was just a flood of stations that you could listen to. It's changed a lot now, obviously, but the way people can listen to things. But at the time, we were kind of unique. Like, Gilles and I didn't know each other really at that time. I was doing the show with Bill Westenhaver, who was another member of our shortwave radio club. We were a very niche little group of people out there, and we thought we were pretty special. We knew about all this stuff and nobody else did. We thought, this is time to tell other people about it. A station like a campus community station is pretty much the only place you can do something like this.
Which is why they're so important.
And that's something that's, you know, very important today. We've been talking about stories like this where some of the campus stations out there are in trouble. They're not getting the support from the universities any longer. Some of them have had, you know, CKUT has been very lucky. They've had good management that's kept them on the rails and you know, played the game with the CRTC, got to do a lot of things that you couldn't do on a commercial station, like you said, but did it within the guidelines of the license and the proof of performance that you have to abide by. So I think CKUT has been very fortunate in that they're able to put this alternative programming on the air. Some of it very controversial, some of it receives a lot of complaints, but the station was always very good at backing people up and saying, no, this needs to be on the air. It follows our principles, and that's why it's there.
We did a lot of talking, and we actually went away on a retreat and really did a deep dive into it about why we were doing what we were doing. At that time, the idea that you could just go on radio and say what you wanted to was a very heady kind of notion. Mm-hmm. But to me, it was a really extraordinary vehicle, and we had to know why we were driving it and where we were going. So we did a lot of talking about why we would allow one type of show that might have a certain orientation, political orientation or philosophical orientation, and not another kind of show. Right. And what was balance, and where did balance come, and how would we assess and evaluate people coming in and so on. All of that, for me, it was always I was trying to look for people who could explain what they wanted to do intelligently. I'm not meaning even intellectually. I'm just saying that they understood what they were trying to do and could explain that. Then, to me, the subject matter wasn't radical at all. It wasn't, quote unquote, in these days, political or whatever. It was just something interesting about a slice of life I may not know anything about. And somebody who's been very thoughtful about it is telling me about that now.
You know, Sue, we've been talking about this as great memories and great background to this show, but we're running out of time. There's more we need to talk about. So, Gilles, you came up with an idea here. What can we do?
So what we're going to do is we're going to continue this, but you'll have to go and view it on our YouTube channel. So if you find this fascinating, I'm sure you are, just go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/@IRR, and you will see the interview continue over there.
That's great. We'll do that. We'll continue with the rest of our show. And after we're through, check out YouTube later on, and you'll be able to hear the rest of our conversation.
So we have a follow-up story of the FCC that writes up three more New York City pirates, this time with $6 million in proposed fines. This is by Randy J. Stein, Radio World. With the Pirate Act signed into law in 2020, a new era dawned for the FCC in its ability to issue larger fines against the operators of pirate radio stations in order to deter illegal operations. In continuing that mission, the FCC has issued $6.4 million in proposed fines against several pirate radio operators located in the Bronx and Brooklyn in New York City, the neighboring city of Mount Vernon. In today's actions, the FCC proposed a maximum penalty allowable under the Pirate Act, upwards of $2.3 million against Johnny Peralta for allegedly operating an unlicensed radio station known as La Mia Radio in the Bronx since 2018. A 2022-2023 New York Pirate Radio sweep by the FCC Enforcement Bureau confirms that La Mia Radio continues to operate. In addition, the commission has proposed a maximum fine against Dexter Blake for his suspected operation of a pirate station known as Linkage Radio in Mount Vernon, just north of the Bronx. The FCC also proposed a forfeiture of $1.8 million against Matthew Bowen for 89 alleged violations of FCC rules due to the continued operation of a station known as 999HD in Brooklyn. The proposed actions in the form of notices of apparent liability, or NALs, required the operators to pay their fine or file a written statement seeking reduction or cancellation of the proposed forfeiture. The parties are given 30 days to respond. The FCC continues its campaign against pirate operators with these actions. The FCC recently confirmed a record fine of $2.3 million against operators of another unlicensed station in New York City. While the Enforcement Bureau tally of fines against pirate operators has grown steadily this year, it is hard to determine how successful the FCC is in those collecting fines. History shows it's not easy to collect money from fly-by-night unlicensed broadcasters. The FCC says unpaid fines are referred to the Department of Justice for collection. The Pirate Act also gives the FCC the authority to go after landlords that house the operations of suspected illegal radio stations. In March, it issued letters to 16 landlords in the New York City area demanding proof that the illegal broadcasts on their properties have ceased and requesting identification of the individuals involved. So I guess for a lot of them, they're not really getting the money for, you know, the fines, but because there's this new rule that they can go against the landlords, maybe that's where the money's going to be.
I just don't know how the landlords are going to react to that. They're going to throw these people out of the building or something. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, those kind of fines. I don't see how they're ever going to collect them. I mean, these people, yeah, I'm sure, don't have anywhere near that kind of money. But, you know, whether they're using that as threats to get them off the air, like, you know, they'll probably negotiate and say, look, you know, we'll give you a couple hundred dollar fine or something and we confiscate your equipment and, you know, you sign something that you're not going to do this again.
Yeah.
Although that hasn't worked up to now. Anyways, we'll see how that goes. As usual, we'll keep an eye out. And the FCC has been pretty good at writing up these reports very quickly when they do track things down and issue the fines. So we'll keep hearing more about this as we go along.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, there were many pirates that had equipment seized and, you know, that sort of stop them right away. Unless they went out and bought new equipment, they weren't going to get back on the air.
Yep.
So to me, that would have more impact, I think, probably, than, you know, issuing a fine that you're probably never going to be able to collect.
So what's happening with our sun? Well, this week it was interesting because there was a lot of instability. There was a few geomagnetic storms that reached like the G1 level, lots of disturbances. So it was kind of an up and down. It was very interesting because I was actually monitoring 25,900 kilohertz BBC while a flare actually happened on the sun. And the BBC faded out in like 30 seconds. And it was like there was nothing there for maybe 10, 15 minutes. And then it slowly came back in. It's interesting to see how the effect of these flares happened on the shortwave bands. So what's coming up is that the sun is actually very quiet, almost spotless, which is very interesting considering we're so close to solar max right now. The sunspot number 26, solar flux 118. I don't remember when we had such a low number for the solar flux. It's been a while. So it's a quiet moment happening now. Maybe this week's going to be a little quiet, but still the bands are open, 10 meters open. Take the time to listen in. Maybe it's that time to listen in for really quiet conditions, but good conditions still. But for that, you will need one thing, is a radio, and you got to turn it on.
This is Janice of Dorval. The International Radio Report presents 30 minutes of news, information, and commentary on developments in the world of radio every Sunday morning at 10:30 on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and online at ckut.ca.
We have a disturbing story next from the Philippines via Radio Info Asia. Radio host shot dead during live broadcast. Juan Jumalon, a radio broadcaster in Mindanao, southern Philippines, was shot dead in his studio while he was on air. Jumalon, 57, also known as DJ Johnny Walker, was in his home-based 94.7 Gold FM Calamba studio when a gunman entered the studio pretending to be a listener and shot him twice in the head. A video of the attack on the station's Facebook page, where the broadcasts are also aired, shows Jumalan pausing and looking upward at something away from the camera before two shots ring out. He slumps back in his chair as background music plays on. The attacker snatched his gold necklace before fleeing. Jumalan was rushed to the hospital where he was pronounced dead on arrival. The police said they were investigating a motive for the killing and were not aware of any previous threats against his life. Jumalan is the fourth journalist to be slain since President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. took over office in June 2022 and the 199th journalist to be killed in the country since 1986, the National Union of Journalists of the Philippines said, condemning the brazen killing. President Marcos Jr. strongly condemned the shooting and said he had ordered the national police to track down, arrest, and prosecute the killers. Attacks on journalists will not be tolerated in our democracy, and those who threaten the freedom of the press will face the full consequences of their actions, Marcos said in a statement. With an average of three or four journalists murdered every year in the Philippines, it is ranked 147th out of 180 countries in the RSF's 2022 World Press Freedom Index. It's also ranked seventh in the Committee to Protect Journalists' most recent Impunity Index, which spotlights countries worldwide where journalists are slain and the killers go free. That's a pretty dramatic story. Whether it was motivated just by, you know, a theft, pretty sad in itself. But that's pretty shocking. A dangerous country, obviously, the numbers prove it. I'm sure a lot of it politically motivated in this case. Maybe just a robbery. I don't know. Hard to say.
Yeah, it is difficult to say. But, you know, what a good way to hide your motives by just saying, hey, it just was a theft. But maybe it's more. We don't know.
It's pretty drastic to kill somebody like that if it was simply just a robbery. I mean, you threaten somebody, you know, give me your money, give me your jewelry, give me your watch, whatever. Yep. You know, this sounded like it was shoot first and steal things later type of thing, or to make it look like a robbery.
Yeah, exactly.
Our next story comes to us from Radio World. Author is James Careless, who does a lot of writing for Radio World, often focuses on international stories. This one is DAB will never replace FM in Australia. DAB is a great digital radio platform, but it will never replace analog FM broadcasting in Australia. So said Fred Ennis, CEO of Australia's Commercial Radio and Audio, during his DAB Down Under talk at the World DAB Summit 2023. It was held in Munich, Germany on November the 8th with more than 400 people in attendance and online. In Australia, we were a relative early adopter of DAB, said Ennis. We've had it for about 14 years or so. 2009, I think, we started. And it's important, but it will never take the place of FM. I think there will be markets where DAB has an important role to play, but it's a complementary and supporting role. The reason for the sheer scale of this country, he explained. Australia is a huge landmass. It's about the same physical size as Europe, if you take out Russia. Yet our population is about the size of the Benelux countries. So it's a big country, and there aren't many people in the country, and that does give us real issues with coverage and reception. Listening is growing, he told the summit audience. It's 5.5 million listeners every week. It's about 20% of all listening to radio in Australia, with 200 stations on the air. It's in 80% of new cars. The number of Australian DAB stations is also growing. Yes, the biggest, most successful stations are the FM and AM stations, but some of the unique DAB-only stations are hugely successful and very innovative. He said a prime example is the DAB-only youth-focused station TikTok, trending on iHeartRadio, along with other DAB-only stations aimed at younger listeners. Like many other DAB countries, Australia's biggest challenge is convincing consumers to buy digital radios. We do marketing, of course. We tend to have a retail focus, he said. DAB sales have grown over time, but are challenged as we see across Europe. He added that Panasonic and Philips are the only two manufacturers bringing large quantities of DAB radios and receivers into Australia. Finishing up his DAB Down Under presentation, Ford Ennis expanded on his central message, reiterating that DAB won't take over FM. What DAB will do is overtake AM listening probably in the next 6 months, which is also about 20% of listening. Nevertheless, I think AM will be sustained. And once again, the big issue is our geography. The big issue is trying to get coverage outside of those five metropolitan areas, which leaves us issues because road networks between the major metropolitan markets aren't covered by DAB. And we do need to look at potential to expand. So this is a country that's not going to be jumping whole hog onto the bandwagon, as some other countries, particularly in Europe, are doing. And they have a large country. They have a lot of very remote areas, and trying to put DAB into all of those areas, and as he says, trying to get people to buy radios, probably just not going to happen.
The limits of digital broadcasting are really apparent. I've had quite a few comments from people even in Europe saying, you know, like in Norway, my country's DAB now, and there's no more FM, but we see that there's problems in reception in fringe areas. If you're a little far away, if there's mountains, you know what? It makes a difference. We don't have reception. I hear these DRM guys saying, hey, you know, DRM's the future. Yeah, but have you ever tried to decode DRM in noisy areas or weak signals? DAB's the same. It might be great in urban areas where signals are strong. Australia's a big country. And it's like if you would put DAB in North America. Imagine in Canada with all the land we have.
A lot of people don't understand is, yes, DAB digital radio sounds really great, but you either hear it or you don't. Yep. We're all experienced with quote-unquote old-style radio, AM, FM, where we get fading. A signal, you're on a fringe, you sometimes hear it, it fades in, it fades out. That doesn't happen with digital radio. You either hear it or you don't. And when you lose it all. So you really need to be in a full reception area to be able to continuously monitor it. You know, we put up with the fading that we hear, you know, trying to listen to shortwave stations or longer distance AM stations. Line of sight is a problem. In a mountainous country, line of sight is a big problem. You know, so these are things that, It almost makes me feel like they didn't think about these things, you know, that, oh, don't worry about it. It's going to sound great and everybody's going to love it. Well, as long as you can hear it, yes. If you can't hear it, well, it's not going to make a difference. You're not going to know whether it sounds better or not because you won't be able to hear it. So, and then I think the key, like he says in his report, convincing people to buy radios. How many people think of buying a new radio because your old one's not going to work anymore?
Right. You know, put DAB if you want. Yeah, sure. Some people adopt. I will be one. But you'll have to keep analog at the same time because lots of people got radios that work already.
Yeah. It's hard to teach old dogs new tricks, as the saying goes. And I think that'll be the biggest problem. So anyways, another story that we keep following, you know, the gradual progression as they keep pushing it and, chip away at it. But we'll see. We'll see where we are, in a year from now, in 5 years from now. Who knows?
So we have upcoming ham radio contests.
Well, we can take the S off of contests, I think, for this week, there is only one. But it's a big one. This is the CQ Worldwide DX contest, the CW version of it. So if you're into Morse code, this is the contest for you. 0100 Zulu, November 25th to 2359 Zulu, November 26th. It's organized by CQ Magazine. The objective is for amateurs around the world to contact as many other amateurs in as many CQ zones and countries as possible. So you've heard this before when we talked. The SSB version of it. Well, this is the CW version. So all the major ham bands, 1.8, 3.5, 7, 14, 21, and 28. But as we said right off the top, it is only CW.
So we are out of time.
We are. We thank you for tuning in, and we will be back again next week. Same time, same station. We do like to hear from you, so do drop us a note, email radioreport@yahoo.com, or join our Facebook group and post your messages there to us if you like. And we invite you to post any stories that you come across that you think might be of interest to us and to our listeners. So have a great week, everybody. We will talk to you again next Sunday with our next edition of the International Radio Report on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
And once again, happy birthday to the International Radio Report and CKUT.
36 years old. Hard to believe.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Took your love.